week. Time for questions. Thank you, first of all. Thank you very much. And the floor is open for questions for 5 minutes. Okay.
I think there's a problem with the popular culture that's sort of against men in general. I mean, if you watch popular television, men are often portrayed as, you know, drunken idiots. And I don't know how you fix that kind of problem. There's certainly an underlying war against men. And even, you know, I don't know if you ever watched Maury Povich, which horrifies me, but, you know, the men are sort of brought on to be accused of being the father of this child only as sort of a money thing. It's sort of, you have to support this child now, not anything else. How do we change that kind of thing?
Well, I think it's I think you're exactly right. There's a, and I'm not blanking, Christianus Hoff Sommers, who wrote a book, The War on Boys, begins in boyhood, not just manhood. Boys are now much, much more vulnerable for poor outcomes than girls are, on every measure you can imagine, including educational achievement. Now, I'm the father of two daughters, no sons, so I don't want to withdraw supports for our daughters, but it seems to me that we have to also understand how vulnerable our sons have become, and to provide more encouragements and supports for them. I do think that there was a study done back in the early 1990s. It's gotten better. But in the early 1990s, there was a study done. They looked at 2,000 or 3,000 television commercials. And where there was both a man and a woman, they rated the extent to which the man was viewed positively or the woman was viewed positively. And in 0% of the cases in that study was the man perceived more positively than the woman. Zero. Now, that's really hard to do, zero. You know, you'd think, you know, there'd be a couple of things that slip through, you know. We did a study at National Father Initiative back in the late 1990s on TV portrayals of marriage and couples in marriage, and found overwhelmingly that the fathers were the idiots that didn't know how to do anything. Now, to some extent, that was probably in reaction to 1950s sitcoms, you know, if you think back to Lucille Ball and so forth, where it was flipped. So I'm not suggesting we need to flip. It just seems to me we should be even-handed.
Hi, thank you, Dr. Horn, for an absolutely engaging talk. My name is Dr. Heather McDonnell, and I'm an academic pediatrician here at our Children's Hospital in Ottawa. And so I may be appealing to your clinical psychology part of your brain, because I definitely can see how shaping public policy to fatherhood, you know, is an excellent strategy. And perhaps you've encountered the Canadian niceness or not wanting, the stereotype about not wanting to offend. So I would say that now in medicine, if I take a family history, I'm not allowed to say married, right? Like, or it would be potentially offensive to the family unit that I'm assessing, or I can't ask where the dad is or who the dad, and we do have quite a few same-sex couples here. And so my question to you professionally and also personally as a mom of a 2.5-year-old and an infant is that how, not just on the public level, but on the individual level, do you not discriminate against the children that are, to a certain extent, victim is too strong, right? But they're the product of these broken families and that, to promote fatherhood in families that don't have fathers without maybe being offensive, for lack of a better word.
Right. Remember that television commercial, the V8? Oops, yeah. I could have had a V8. Well, you know, that's the way we sort of think about this issue. If we mention, if we say fathers matter, the kids that don't have fathers are going to go, I could have had a father. You know, like, oops, I could have had some. It's not, they know. The people who know so clearly that there's no father around are the kids that don't have a father around. Yet somehow we think if we protect them by not talking about this issue, they won't notice. It's not true, first of all. They notice a lot. But the message they get when we refuse to talk about it publicly is there's something wrong with their father hunger, that it's their fault, their problem. that because nobody else seems to think it's a problem that I don't have a dad around, and I really would like to have a dad around. And so it seems to me that it's our problem. It's not the kids' problems, and we're afraid ourselves. So I just think you just need to like get over it and just talk about it. You know, that's why I said I was this one-man systematic desensitization project. You know, it's when we started the National Fatherhood Initiative, I got reporters saying, "Why Fatherhood Initiative? Why not Parenthood Initiative?" And would say, "Because when 90% of the single-parent households are headed by fathers, I'm going to start the National Motherhood Initiative. But the guy that's missing is the father, and so he's got to know that's what we're talking to." You can still be very respectful of those kids. Again, go back to that airplane analogy. I mean, you don't want to withdraw. That's why you don't want to stigmatize those kids. You know, I mean, some people, you know, there's a sort of, you know, some extremists on both ends, and there's some extremists, particularly back in the 90s, who talked about bringing back the word bastard. Count me out. Okay? You know, I'm not there. Because we have to stigmatize single mothers. No, I'm not there. But don't be afraid to talk about what is real and what is true. I'll tell you one last story. I had an epiphany when I was at a children's hospital. I had a string of parents who would come in and say, "We're getting a divorce, and we want you to help our kid not be damaged by it." It's true, you know. And I remember I sat there and I was having a bad day. There's no question about it. And I looked and I said, "No, I'm not." I said, if your goal of seeing me is to pretend that your child will not be impacted by your divorce in any way, I can't do that for you because I don't know how to do that for you. Now, if you want to come and see me and fight for your marriage, I'll see you every day for the next 2 years. But I'm not gonna be part of this conspiracy to tell your kids that if they're feeling bad about your divorce, they shouldn't be. Now, that doesn't mean we can't minimize the conflict and all of that, and I'm all for that, but not the idea that there will never be any impact. Our kids will not notice we're suddenly now living in different homes and not married to each other. They notice. So, you know, it's our problem, and I think we just have to, and I do understand Canadian nice. I watch the Olympics.
Two more questioners in light of time, directly to your question, and if we can keep the answers short.
Well, just one quick comment that in Canada we're trying to do away with father and mother as well, because now we've shifted most of our laws to legal parent, which most people aren't aware of, which has huge consequences that nobody seems to care about. But my question is, because we have this situation where it seems to be polarizing in the popular whatever, media whatever, that the only good parent is a female one, do you think that has a contributing factor to the huge number of situations of parental alienation we have when people get divorced and parental alignment within the family where the kids seem to have all be one way or the other? Do you see any kind of connection to that, or have you ever thought of that connection, possibly?
Sure. We started the National Fatherhood Initiative. We had a mission statement. Mission statements really matter if you believe them. Okay. And our mission statement was to increase the number of kids growing up with involved, committed, and responsible dads in their lives, because they provide something unique and irreplaceable in the lives of their children. Unique and irreplaceable. That doesn't mean better. The word better is not there. You know, and my fear in some of the mommy daddy wars, particularly, you know, the post-divorce wars, is that it becomes who's better as opposed to different, yeah, unique, and irreplaceable. And I think if we can get to a place where we say moms are unique and irreplaceable and dads are unique and irreplaceable, we'll be in a much better place.
Thank you. Just going off the comment about unique and irreplaceable, I mean, how does that affect the discussion of same-sex marriage, and how can we present arguments related to the homosexual discourse in a way that doesn't come off as offensive or bigoted?
I assumed I'd get that question. I get that a lot. In American football, you know, there's this, you punt. I punt on that one. And I do that purposely you get dragged, from my view, if I get dragged into that debate, what happens is that's all it becomes about. And so, you know, when there's not 25 million kids living in fatherless households in the United States, it's more like 2 million. All right, I'll get in that debate. But, you know, I don't know how, from my view, I stay focused on that, the work of reducing fatherless households, and get too drawn into the gay marriage debate. Reporters, you know, it's always like, when we started National Father Initiative, I mean, myself, Don Everly, and David Blankenhorn, who are the three sort of co-founders, and two of the three are known Republicans. So, you know, the reporters would call, and they'd always get to that question. That would be the question. It'd be like everything else was like prelude to that one question. And we just would say, we don't have an opinion. They'd say, you must have an opinion. I said, yes, I have a personal opinion, but that's not what the mission of this organization is about. That doesn't mean it's not an important issue. People in this room may feel very passionately about it. And please, you know, I'm not saying you shouldn't be or you shouldn't do something around that issue. But, you know, my issue is, and my perspective is, there's a lot of dysfunctional heterosexual marriages. There's a lot of heterosexual divorce. There's a lot of heterosexual fathers who aren't living with their kids. And that's where I've chosen to give my, to focus my time. So that's what we call a punt.